Time now for the Six Rings Postgame Show, presented by McFarlane Energy. Breaking down everything Patriots. Now, here's Fitzy and Hart on WEEI.
Wherever he lines up, but has just one catch today. Can still get a first down, but need the touchdown to win. Gibson has a receiver top of your screen. Reset looking, throwing, on his own. 1 foot, 2 feet, touchdown, Jalen Pope. You gotta come down. You gotta come down. Even though the toe back of the end zone, you have to come down.
With
Dean Blandino, our rules analyst, watching closely at a tight game. And Dean, how do you see it?
After review, it is an incomplete pass.
That's the right call.
Patriot Nation, welcome in to the Six Rings and Football Things postgame show here on WEEI, and welcome in to your ugly present reality. Andy Jumbo Hart here alongside, momentarily or for a few minutes, Chris Shime Time Shime, the voice you want to hear break down the ugliest football game I personally believe I have ever witnessed. The Patriots lose 15-10 to the Miami Dolphins. Both teams made virtually every mistake you can make in the book, right on down through the final seconds. Dolphins couldn't put the game away. Patriots teased Gillette Stadium for seconds, especially a large portion of the crowd that didn't know the rules, the old Chris Collinsworth toe-heel rule. When your toe comes down and you put your heel down, the heel must come down in bounds, wiping out Jalen Polk's would-be touchdown. Dolphins get the ball back. That was fourth down. Dolphins have to punt. Patriots, in the waning seconds, throw to Hunter Henry down inside the 10-yard line. The only problem is Hunter Henry was in the middle of the field. Hunter Henry was not able to get up and do some miraculous two-second spike or anything to down the play clock. And game over. Patriots fall to 1-4. They had a chance to move into a tie, if you believe it, for second place in the AFC East. They could not, did not do it. And they all, along with Mike McDaniel's Dolphins, set the game of football back some 50 years with missed kicks, blocked kicks, penalties, just about every mistake you can think a football team could make, they made. The Dolphins made. Backup quarterbacks for both teams, even, yes, I know, Jacoby Brissett is technically a starting quarterback. He played like a backup yet again. We did not see Drake May, much to the dismay of many in Patriot Nation. So, Chris, Shime Time Shime, before we get to calls, because I want to line them up, 617-779-7937, text line 37937. This is the ultimate three-plus hours of commiseration where we are in Patriot Nation. But, Chris Shime, give me your much smaller gut reaction, thanks to our friends at Awaken 180.
It is, I got to tell you, first off, I hate that you have to have your heel down rule. I think it's dumb. I think the toe should count. I honest to God, like, I think that should count. Jacoby Brissett deserves that. Like, I think it was an ugly game, top to bottom. But when it mattered most, when you needed it, somehow, some way, he got you down the field. He got you in a position to win the game. And because of a stupid, you need to get your heel down as well rule, even though there's other plays all the time that you get your toe down and they're in bounds, you get, by a technicality, you get ruled out of bounds. Like, that's, and you lose the football game. Like, that's kind of a bummer. I gotta be honest. I thought that, as bad of a game as it was, I thought that they deserved to win that game with that play there at the end, and unfortunately, it didn't go that way.
I would argue neither team deserved to win anything on this day, and they all owe us our money back, our lives back, our time back, and our
fun back. Well, yeah, we discussed this on the pregame, on the football pregame show, Andy, that this game should have even been played. It's like an affront to everybody that watches football. However, it needed to be played. It was a scheduled NFL game, and at the end of the day, like, it's just, it's unfortunate that the New England Patriots didn't win this game. This is yet another. This is now number two on the list of games that they should have won and didn't.
And they continue to not be able to close out games and win games at Gillette Stadium. That's where that Seattle game you're alluding to earlier this season and back in September took place, where they kind of gagged that one away. They gave it away in the end. They forced Seattle to come back in overtime and win it. And this one, they were on the comeback attempt. And as you said, it looked like they were going to have it. And I'm not even going to call it a rookie mistake by Jalen Polk. I just think it was circumstantial. As you said, you can question the rule. It's been a rule for a long time. It's a rule that many don't know.
Didn't even know it, to be completely honest.
I feel like every time it happens, and it happens, I don't know, once or twice a year in a situation like this where there's a big catch for a first down or a touchdown, and I do always in my head here, I think Chris Collinsworth is the one I credit with saying it the most, toe heel, a former receiver, he knows it so well, and he says it almost like you do with a tone of discontent or... Yeah. The desire, like, that kind of sucks that that's the rule. But it has been the rule forever, and the Patriots are burned by it. Certainly wasn't the only reason they lost this football game.
No, by no means.
I would need a old Dead Sea Scrolls version to unroll to give you all those reasons why they lost this game, because quite honestly, there weren't a lot of positives to pull from it. I will say the biggest positive, especially this week, coming off of Mutinygate, coming off the report slash hot take, slash whatever you want to call it, from Evan Lazar, Patriots.com, on the Catch 22 podcast, that he believed that the locker room was on the verge of a mutiny. This did not look like a mutinous football team. Teams that are on the verge of mutiny do not fight to the finish in the ugliest football game that anyone's ever seen. And I will say it till I am horse in the mouth, and because I already am, I'm already a little under the weather. This team fights to the finish for Gerard Mayo. They stink. They don't have a lot of talent. I'm not sure they're well coached. I'm not sure any of that, but I can tell you, we just witnessed 60 minutes of football, and honestly, if they had had 60 minutes and 20 seconds, they might have won this football game.
Yeah, and I think there's another positive, too. I think the defense can be taken away as a positive here, right? You limited Tyreek Hill. You didn't allow for that one big play at any point in the game. You never let him get behind you, and you kind of kept everything in front of you, which we were all concerned about, especially knowing that both your two starting safeties were out of this game. Like, that immediately was a red flag, like, oh, boy, here comes Tyreek Hill. And yet, Christian Gonzalez, excellent game out of him. Good game out of Jonathan Jones as well. Like, I mean, Stu Puntley constantly had to check down to Jonnu Smith. And if you're going to force Jonnu Smith to beat you, that's the way to do it, right? Like, you take the two aces out of the game, and you're like, all right, if you're going to beat us, you're going to have to beat us with Jonnu Smith and running the football. And unfortunately for you, that's exactly what they did at the end of the game. They gashed you in the run game.
Now, I will say, 128 passer rating would be good. The unfortunate thing is that's me adding up the two quarterbacks' passer ratings to get to 128. Snoop Huntley, 63.1 passer rating. Jacoby Brissett, 65.8 passer rating, even with a few plays at the end of the game. Then the reality is you saw a missed field goal by both teams. One was a doink by the Dolphins. We saw the Patriots get a blocked punt and then not be able to do anything with it offensively. We saw the Dolphins snap a ball on third down, a critical third down, where the quarterback wasn't paying attention. I'm still not sure what the play was supposed to be. Almost looked like it was maybe a direct snap to a back who also wasn't ready. I don't know. Huge loss. We had endless penalties all across the board. I think the Patriots finished with 13, if I remember correctly, including right at the end where Hunter Henry, when they're in a fourth down situation, loses 5 yards to make it just that. I mean, some people might say, hey, he gave him more space to work with in the red zone. It's tight
down
there.
That works.
To me, it was just emblematic and symbolic because Hunter Henry, of course, is one of those guys who's been elevated to captain status because of all the injuries that had Gerard Mayo joking that being a captain is like the Madden curse for the Patriots. You mentioned it. You were without Duggar. You were without Peppers. You had a different offensive line yet again.
And they were pretty good.
Well, after they got out of the first drive, because on the first drive, they finished with back-to-back sacks. Although I will say, I thought the first one was Brissett. The second one was, I don't know, just jailbreak.
That was
their fault. You know how you said there's a new stat called ass, apparently?
Yes.
The Patriots played up to that stat on that third down play there, that offensive line. And you're right. I thought there were times when the offensive line actually gave Jacoby Brissett significant time to scan the field and throw. I will say late, what we've all been calling for became the offense, which was get the ball to DeMario Douglas, including DeMario Douglas calling for that. You had a nice pickup there. I think it was like a 20-yard pickup over the middle of the field. That was part of the comeback attempt. He finished with a team-high 6 catches for 59 yards. As you said, they did a good job with Tyreek Hill and Jaylen Waddle. Tyreek Hill had 6 for 69. His longest catch, 21 yards. Waddle was 4 for 46 with a 20-yarder. Christian Gonzalez had an interception early in the game, undercut a route really nicely. Almost had a second one in the end zone. Then probably got away with a little bit of a push on a would-be potential touchdown from Tyreek Hill, which that actual span of those plays might have been the most excitement there was in the entire game. 100%. It was almost a pick for Gonzalez. Hill kind of breaks it up. He drops it. Then Hill looks like he might have a touchdown, which, by the way, some of us may have had an anytime Tyreek Hill touchdown that would have really liked that to have been in bounds there. But it didn't happen. Other than that, it was some running the ball. That, I will say, both teams at times did find some consistency in the ground game. Mm-hmm. Looking at the numbers, Jalen Wright, the rookie, had 86 yards. Mostert had 80 yards. Ramondre Stevenson did not start, but he did finish with 89 yards rushing, including a 33-yard touchdown. More importantly, he did not fumble in the game, so he was able to break that streak that he had going of four straight games with a fumble. But overall, and just listening to or interacting with people on social media, on Twitter, Patriot Nation was not happy with what they were watching, and I don't blame them. The reality is this was a bad football game. We knew by most power rankings this was 31 versus 32. The toilet bowl, the basement bowl, whatever you wanted to call it. Two teams may be fighting for the number one pick in next April's draft as we play out this season. And the reality is it lived up to the hype, as Rich Keefe tweeted. It lived up to the abysmal hype.
Yeah,
are you going to tell me this game was better than I'm selling it as?
Slightly. Not
what?
Much. Not much. It was ugly.
Worst game I've ever seen. Literally at any level.
I don't think that's accurate.
I've never seen a worse game.
You've seen Thursday night football games that have finished 9-6.
I don't care about the score.
Games.
I'm talking about the litany of
with the
plays
penalties and everything.
The refs were part of it. There were holds that maybe they were holds, maybe they weren't. But in this kind of a game, know your audience. It's a crappy game. Don't throw the flag. We're lusting for plays. I would also include for the worst game I've ever watched, Mark Sanchez and his little man bun or whatever the hell that thing is. Like, from broadcast to quarterbacks to Dolphins to Patriots to you had 12 men on a punt early. What are we doing?
I don't disagree. It was disgusting on many levels. But I also think that there are a lot of positives to take away for the New England Patriots, one of which I'm kind of upset they stopped running the football as much. Like, they should have run the football more. A, you would have kept your defense off the field a little bit more, might have been a little bit more in shape and ready to go at the end of the game there, might not have lost the game on a drive that was just run after run, because you were averaging over 7.5 yards a carry on offense. Like, I understand you want to get the pass game going, but when the run game's working, don't go away from it. Like, Antonio Gibson was bouncing off guys. He looked good. Ramondre Stevenson, before he got that ankle injury, he looked great. Like, I don't know. I feel like they're getting in their own way at times. Not just, penalties are one way, but like in this situation, like, do we really have to throw 34 times with Jacoby Brissett?
No.
I feel like that number could have been 10 less, 12 less, and you might have actually won this football game because of it.
Especially in a game that was, whatever it was, 10-6, 10-9,
15-10. You were leading the whole time.
But not only leading or trailing, it was always like a one-score game. Any play was going to win the game. I agree with you on that because Jacoby Brissett is what he is. He's still a tough MF-er. He still takes hits and gets up right on through the end of that game, right on to the last play, the last play of the would-be Polk scoring drive when he's throwing off his back heel. Like, he's under pressure, and teams are going to continue to blitz him. And I don't know what the hit rate was today, but I'm guessing it was probably up there around 50%, 40-something percent again. And, yes, I don't know that taking the 20-something throws and elevating it to 30-something throws, even though you are trying to come back, and some of that is inflated by those last couple drives there, you were in this game, or leading this game, as you noted, for a long period of time, and the one thing you were doing somewhat capably, even with some holds mixed in to call back some runs and things of that nature, was run the football, Ramondre Stevenson. It was sort of, in a lot of ways, if you removed all the ugliness, which you can't do because there was a lot of it, but if you removed all the ugliness, this is the game they want to play. A low scoring, run the football, play defense, have a chance to win it at the end, either play from ahead and have our defense make a play or have one drive to a comeback. This is the style they were built for.
Unfortunately, they're not disciplined enough to actually win it in the end of the game.
And that's a problem. And that is a significant problem. And that, or depending on how you look at it, because we did get a text from Boss Man Laird who said one of the silver linings from this game, and he's right, there's a silver lining, because I think this team needs to pile up as many losses as possible, is that this loss could be the difference maker. This loss, or the Seattle loss, could be the difference between you picking Travis Hunter? Or are you trading a top pick for a quarterback and then picking Travis Hunter at 3 or 4, moving down a couple spots and adding assets? So losses, I do believe, are the best thing for this team, because if there's a glaring observation that I have, I'm not alone here. It's gonna be record-breaking.
They kind of stink personnel-wise.
Yeah, of course they stink personnel-wise. I don't understand why everybody is so geeked up about being top three to draft Travis Hunter. We can have that discussion another time. But
no, you've got to be top three to have the best pick. You always want to have the best pick.
No. I agree. That I understand having the best pick.
I don't care about Travis Hunter or anybody.
I don't understand why everybody wants Travis Hunter so bad.
Well, because he's the next big thing. He's like, year of Shohei Ohtani, he's the two-way player who's making plays. He's fun. He's different. He's sexy. He's exciting. He's not a left tackle, so I have no interest in him. I don't actually care as much about the top pick as I've seen so many drafts. We're going to go to Jerod Mayo now before we talk about the draft.
We're tough, but we just have to be better from an execution standpoint. We got to be able to execute in situations. We got to be able to execute on a play-by-play basis, and we didn't do that. I would also say as the game wore on, our fundamentals began to slip, and that could be a combination of things. But, look, we'll watch the film with a critical eye, and we just got to put a better team out there.
Dan Roach in the back.
Jerod, but the 12 penalties, and like you just said with the execution, what are you telling your team after a day like today?
That we can't do it. We talk all the time about pre-snap and post-snap penalties. It just wasn't a good day.
Jerod, how would you describe the separation at this point between Jacoby and Drake at quarterback? Is there a big gap between the two of them?
I don't want to get into like the separation talk. I will say, look, Jacoby's out there trying to do what we've asked him to do from the start. He's taking some big hits, and you know, his toughness continues to show up. Execution from the entire offense has to be better going forward. So,
Mike Giardi. Jerod, just obviously the defense had held them down for a better part of the game.
Yeah.
Do you think fatigue factored in on the 15-play 80-yard drive to put them ahead?
Yeah, I know for a fact fatigue played a part in this game. You know, you think about Marte, this being his first game and playing pretty much every snap. You know, I appreciate him doing that, but at the same time, like, we got to get off the field. We got to be able to move the ball offensively. We have to win the time of possession game, or at least be close, which, once again, they controlled that.
Jerod, on the pass to Jalen in the back of the end zone, the closing minutes, what were your thoughts on how that play unfolded, and did you get an explanation from the referees on how the ruling and how it was overturned?
Look, you guys can ask the referees about that. You know, I thought it was close. It was close, but it was the correct call, in my opinion, but I'll have to go back and watch the film. I saw the replay live. Just a tough call.
Hey, Jerod, just to what do you attribute the lack of production in the passing game?
I mean, I think it's a combination of things. It's not just one person. It's everyone just going out there and executing. It's not even knowing what to do. It's, all right, a piece moves. We got to be able to identify that and go out there and execute. So.
Jerod, what did you think of the way the offensive line played today compared to the last couple weeks?
Yeah, I will have to look at the film. I would say there were times where the pocket looked pretty clean, and then there were times where you had a free runner right up the A-gap, and we got to do a better job taking care of that. It's about consistency. That's what it's about. It's about consistency.
Phil Perry on the left.
Jerod, late in the game on third down, they called a pass interference on Christian Ellis, led to a touchdown drive. Did they explain to you the foul on that play? Was there any sort of explanation after
that? That's a question for those guys. You know, they threw the flag, and we always talk about, you know, we'll do business is being done. We just got to do a better job as a whole, you know, with penalties in general, whether it's holding or pass interference or anything. Like, look, I don't think the referees are just out to get anyone in particular. I think we just got to play smarter.
Jerod, just as the head coach, how bothersome is it that things like discipline, penalties, production is getting worse, not better?
Yeah, the pre-snap stuff definitely bothers me. And look, we have guys, they're out there, they're trying their butts off, but you know, at the same time, going back, not to sound like a broken record, it's about execution, especially in critical situations.
We'll go up here.
Jerod, anything that you can anything that you can share about Ramondre Stevenson? We saw him really efforting to get off the field late in the game, but I don't believe he went into the medical tent?
He went back in the game after that.
So. Oh, I'm sorry.
We'll see. We'll see how he feels tomorrow.
Andrew Callahan?
Gerard, through five games, how would you assess the job you're doing as a head coach and your staff is as a whole?
Well, I would say for me, look, it's all about getting better. It's all about learning. It's experience. Look, there are definitely things that I have to do better as a head coach. I would say the staff, you know, they're still, you know, they're getting on the same page. And once again, like I said earlier, it's about getting better every week. And that goes to communication between the staff. And then, obviously, I have to do a better job as a whole.
Gerard, you guys got down to the 12-yard line at the end of the fourth quarter and called four straight passes. Is there any thought of running the ball in that situation since you guys were more productive on the ground?
Well, there are a bunch of conversations, you know, about that. We ended up throwing the ball. That's what we decided to do, and ultimately it's my decision. I would say, you know, we average, what, over 7 yards a carry? I'm not sure. So that definitely was part of the decision, or I should say part of the discussion. We just didn't finish it up.
Gerard, you talked about the offense needs to get going points-wise, 10, 13, and 3 the last three games. What kind of things can you do as the head coach in your mind to get more points produced with this offense?
You know, we tell the guys all the time, you know, once you cross the white lines, it's your offense, it's your defense, it's your special teams. You got to take accountability. And, you know, we got to look at ourselves in the mirror, myself, starting with myself and the rest of the coaching staff, and we just got to continue to progress.
Gerard, you talked, I believe, this week or last week about you expected to take some lumps. My question is, did you expect the lumps to be to this degree and the nature of which you're losing?
I expected to take my lumps just like a lot of other first-year head coaches. So, look, I'm fine with that. Once again, it's about the guys in that locker room, and we have to be better, we including me. So.
Last question, far right, Sophie Will.
Hi, Gerard. Over here.
Oh, sorry.
I was just curious. We saw Keon White take two penalties on the same drive, both for 15 yards. Just what did you see from that drive, and kind of what was your message to Keon when he got off the field?
It comes back to discipline. Once again, it's all about discipline. It's about execution. I think those are the right calls. Thank you.
That was Patriots head coach Gerard Mayo following a disappointing 15-10 loss to the Dolphins. Patriots fall to 1-4 on the season. And I think the two quotes I took away from that, Chris Scheim, here on the Six Rings and Football Things postgame show on WEEI. First was, it just wasn't a good day. I agree 100% with that statement, Gerard. Yep. Then I thought there was, when we got past some of the whining about penalties, I'm glad Gerard put people in their place. And whether you knew the rule or not, the rule was right. It's toe heel. If we want to have a discussion about should the rule be changed, is it a bad rule? It's been a rule for a long time. Gerard, give you credit for acknowledging that. The pass interference call on Christian Ellis, I also thought was pass interference. And the thing that bothered me there is you kind of earned it by scrambling. You lined up wrong. He was in the right slot. And he runs all the way over to the left slot, and then he's like, it's a fire drill. It's an absolute fire drill.
As much as you might hate Mark Sanchez's bun, like he did a really good job pointing that out. He's like, look, Ellis was on the wrong side of the field. The safety's yelling at him, dude, that's your guy. Go cover him. He gets over there, ball gets snapped, and he's immediately like a chicken with his head cut off.
Right, under duress, and I thought he hit him early. Like, it is what it 100%. Is, and it's a bad penalty, but I think his not lining up properly had his hair on fire and didn't realize it was a longer yardage situation, but he made the mistake, in my opinion. But the question I found really interesting was when somebody asked him, I couldn't quite remember who it was, asked about, it might have been Doug Kide, his job as a head coach and his staff and how they have performed. And he said, it's all about getting better, learning, experience. And immediately my head jumped to one player on the team with that quote. And that was Drake May. It's all about getting better, learning, and experience. And he's not getting that opportunity.
He's not getting
We've had mixed messages from the media this week. We have Greg Bedard telling us that he's got sources telling them that May isn't ready and he's struggling with certain specific aspects of the offense behind the scenes, which conveniently came on the heels, by the way, of every defensive coach telling us how good May has been in practice and making plays, and also preceded Albert Breer telling us May has gotten significantly better of late. He specifically worked on blitzes this week and he's gotten really close, and this is becoming annoying, and the reality is, Gerard, if you deserve the opportunity to fail on the job, which you're doing, you're failing as a head coach, you're 1-4, as he correctly points out, other head coaches fail in their first year. Happens all the time. It's a learning curve. You usually took over a bad football team. There's a lot of factors there. But why do you get to learn on the job and fail, but Drake May has to be put behind the scenes and we can't see him play and he can't inject life into this team?
Well, because the other two guys whose job would be tied to Drake May don't get to learn on the job and don't get that leeway. And that's why. And they are being the ones that are holding him back. I firmly believe it's Alex Van Pelt and Elliot Wolf who are holding back Drake May from being unleashed on this offense, because I think if all things being equal, Jerod Mayo had 100% say on all this. Basically, he was in Bill Belichick's position last year. He'd be like, yeah, Drake May is playing. We're going to do this together. We're going to learn. We're going to take our lumps. We're going to take it one step at a time. And instead, he's sitting on the sidelines because that offensive coordinator is either playing scared or just knows that as soon as Drake May hits the field, that clock starts. And if he's not good, if the offense still stinks, even with Drake May, his job is on the line, not Jerod's.
617-779-7937, 37937 on the text line. We want you to join in, especially if you're leaving Gillette, because that probably means you're lubed up and pissed off and unhappy and want to rant a little bit. So we are going to go to the
hot today,
as it should be. We're going to go to the phone lines. We're going to start with Justin from Gillette, who has a question about the would-be go-ahead touchdown late for Jalen Polk. Justin, thanks for joining us. What do you think? Justin? Guess Justin's not there. Maybe Joe Braverman's not there to pot that up. Not sure what happened to Justin. Justin, are you alive?
He probably is, but he was on hold.
Son of a Justin. Where did he go?
He's like us with Drake May. He's tired of waiting.
Well, I'll be the one to say it. Like, I didn't know that was a rule. If I was in the stadium and I didn't have the play-by-play,
you would have booed just like them.
I 100%. I would have been losing my bleeping mind, especially if I was a little lubed up. I was a little rowdy. Patriots were driving down the field and under 2 minutes. I would have been pissed because that, to me, in my head, I'm like, I see toe down, that guy's in bounds. I wouldn't have known, like you, the Chris Collinsworth classic, got to get the heel down as well. Like that, to me, I would, because I just think, you know, they talk about toe drag swag all the time. And so, like,
that you can do.
Yeah. In my head, though, as long as a piece of the body is in bounds after that first foot comes in, if another piece hits in bounds, I'm like, boom, done, doesn't matter, he's in bounds.
They've seen things that are unimaginable.
The problem would be in that situation, and I think part of what it is if you had it foot forward, so if you step heel toe, right, if your toe comes down out of bounds, same thing, you're out. You can't, there's no heel drag or whatever.
Yeah, I just think it's a dumb rule because like if it's 1 foot, the other foot stays in the air and then your hand touches inbound, you're inbound. Like it's like it should just be if 1 foot hits, any other body part needs to touch inbounds and you're in. Like that's kind of what irks me. It's just, I understand it's a rule. I understand, like, by the letter of the law, yes, he's out of bounds. I think it's a dumb rule, and it should be adjudicated as such.
Certainly cost the Patriots and Jalen Polk, who probably could have used that to sort of not only inject life in the offense and the game and win the game, but also his early tenure here in New England as they try to find go-to receivers. As I said, this would have been a really interesting comeback story for Jacoby Brissett if it was DeMario Douglas helps get us in range for a touchdown. Jalen Polk scores the touchdown. Oh, we got some young receivers making plays with the game on the line late. What mutiny? Hell with mutiny. They're in love with Jerod. They're fighting for their coaches. But instead, we're left to talk about a terrible loss and a floundering football team that it's not going to get any better. There's a better football team they will be facing next week. And I know everybody tells me, the schedule's softening up and there's all these winnable games. But if you don't win them, if you're not capable of taking the actual victory, then a soft schedule or a hard schedule, does it matter if you lose by 40 or you lose by 5? You're still
no,
a loser.
A loss is a loss. An L is an L. And like they say soften up. I just saw C.J. Stroud throw for 330 yards this week against the Bills. I just saw the Jaguars score 37, 38 points, something stupid like that this week against the Colts. Like, as much as you want to assume or believe that the schedule is softening up, it's really not. There's no easy schedule in the NFL, and this certainly is not one of them.
Especially when you are the worst team in football. And
yes.
I don't know if people have embraced or acknowledged that.
And have arguably the worst quarterback in football.
I don't. Well, you're right. It is arguable because I think Snoop Huntley stinks. And if
he's
we're calling him
good. Hey, he played better than Jacoby Brissett today, though.
Did he? I don't
yes,
know
he
if
did.
He did.
He did. He made a few throws. Like
less worse?
He made a lot of mistakes, but he also made a few throws. And granted, he's also been on that roster for 2 weeks, not an entire offseason leading into the season. Like, Jacoby Brissett is worse than Snoop Huntley.
I don't know. They both stink.
Oh, they both stink. They both
and I love my guy, Jacoby Brissett. My guy, we'll probably talk to him in the afternoon program on Monday afternoon from Gillette Stadium.
Good luck with
that. He is a tough SOB, and it's not all on him. The issues they're having certainly aren't on him, especially some of these penalties. I mean, you have a wide receiver essentially false start with the game on the line. How does that happen? Like Hunter Henry, and I know Hunter Henry immediately goes, my bad. Yeah, we know it's your bad. We were watching the game. It can't happen. You're a well-paid professional with 10 years of NFL experience. How does, I just, some of those mistakes are unfathomable to me, but that's where we are. Patriots lose 15-10 to the Miami Dolphins. Dolphins, a football team that hadn't found the end zone in, what, weeks and had scored fewer points than just about anybody in like the last 30 years through the first four games, found a way to gut it out, get a win at Gillette Stadium, where the Patriots continue to struggle to close out football games, win football games dating back to last year, where they just had a single win at Gillette. 1-4, last place in the AFC East, heading towards the top pick in the draft, which I know excites some fans. So we will be talking about this dismal loss. We'll be talking about when it's time to start Drake May. I think most of you would argue, now, Andy, it's a short discussion, but we will talk about it. Should have been this week. I've been circling this week for months, literally months.
Everybody
it didn't
has.
Happen. You might have won this game if you'd had him as quarterback. Hell, you had a chance to win this game either way. But 617-779-7937, 37937. Join us on the text line. We will have either Chris Scheim or Joe Braverman read some of those texts, because I think people are even more emotional and honest on the text line.
They are lighting it up today.
They let it slip. Give me one real quick before we go to break. Just give me a fun text to show me what is coming through the text line.
All right. There was one. Let's see. Okay. Problem is now, they're such a mess, you have to start firing guys. You just look more incompetent, it becomes even more of a mess. Honestly, Mayo doesn't have it in him to discipline or manage this roster. He's too soft in a situation where I believe needs more structure and accountability. He's just not the guy. That's a 508 texter for you.
Okay, the 508 is firing Gerard Mayo at 1-4, just five games into his NFL career. I'm pretty sure Robert Kraft, who said there were tough times ahead when he hired Gerard Mayo, will not be firing him that soon, but when you have a game as ugly as this, a loss as ugly as this, it tends to create those negative and emotional feelings among fans. We are here to talk you through it for the next 3 hours till 7:30 p.m. Somewhere along the way, Fitzy will join the fun. We'll let Scheim go back to his beer and his night, and we can continue to break down this hideous loss right after this.
No, we just got to play better. It's getting to that point where we just got to play better. Penalties in the wrong situation and bad situations, and you know we're not good enough to do that. You know, and to go backwards to try to score points. We need to continue to go forward. And we gotta change that, fix that.
Josh Brogan here.
Thanks, Jacoby. You said you've got to play better. Are there anything specifically that you can point to about your offense that can get better in the short term before the season gets out of hand?
Yeah, we got to score more points. In the short term, that's what we got to do. We got to score more points.
Miller in the front.
Jacoby, toward the end of the game, you went no huddle several times. You seemed to get a rhythm, seemed to go faster. Is that something, A, you enjoy, and would you like to see that incorporated more?
Yeah, we're we're going to go back and watch the film and see if that's a, you know, a possibility too as well. We had some success in it. It's a lot of plays before that caused us to lose this game. It wasn't because, we just went into no huddle and we're making yards. We got to play better. We got to execute and we got to play with good fundamentals and technique and do the right things.
As a leader on this team, how do you keep the frustration from boiling over after a game like this with so many penalties and losing four straight?
Yeah, you got to go back and watch the film. That's the part about this league where now is taking it from the classroom to the field and, you know, in those critical moments and treating every day in practice like it's, you know, the last play of the game and we're down and we need to make a play. I think that's what it's going to come down to, you know, and it's going to come down to, and you watch all the penalties and whatever the case may be, it's all come down to fundamental and technique, and that's what we're lacking at right now.
Inner Kyle's in the middle.
Jacoby, during your first possession for the two-minute drive, was the idea there to try to put some points up and try to go for a double score?
Say that again?
During your first possession during the two-minute drive, I was wondering, was
at the end of the game?
Before halftime, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Was the idea to try to go for the double score, like obviously score before halftime and then come back out and try to score again?
Yeah, I mean, that's always the plan, especially when you get the ball in the second half.
Zach Cox, right?
Jacoby, what do you think needs to change with this offense to get it to the level where it needs to be?
we got to play better, man. It's no magic thing that we need to do. We just got to play better. We gotta execute better. We gotta play with good fundamentals better. We got to do all the little things better. I think that's what we're getting to the, like, when you're back and watch this film, it's not about this person, that person, this play, that play. We just got to play better as a unit.
Jacoby, when it comes to the penalties, is there anything you can put your finger on to just sort of help explain why we're seeing as many as we're seeing?
I can't do that right now. I have to go back and watch the film and be able to, you know, really assess that. I'm sure it's going to come down to fundamentals. I know I keep saying it, but that's probably what it's going to come down to.
Final question? We've got Dan Roach in the back.
Kind of a follow-up to that. Do you feel like you're seeing things where you know, like, okay, I think we can get there if we cut those mental mistakes down and things like that? Are you starting to see things?
Oh, at least for some sure. Progression? Yeah, we're making plays. We're just shooting ourselves in the foot. You know, it's we're going one step forward to go 20 steps back. You know, it's like we can't do that. You know, and until we get to that point, you know, we're going to continue to be frustrated at the small things, you know, and you can't leave the game into the ref's hand. That's not what football is about. You know, you got to go out there, play with good fundamentals, technique, do the little things right. You know, this league is so hard already. You know what I mean? The margin of error is so slim, and to not be able to do that because of lack of focus and a lack of things that we all have control over. You know, we're not good enough for that yet.
You just heard from a battered, bruised, and beleaguered Jacoby Brissett, who once again was knocked down, hit, smacked around, basically just treated to a brutal day at home again as the Patriots lose 15-10 to Miami. Starting to get an idea that most people at Gillette Stadium need to either take a look in the mirror, take a look at the film and get better, or do both. And apparently that's going to heal all that ails these particular New England Patriots. I also tend to disagree with that, but that's what we're here for. Hello, it's your old pal Nick Fitzy Stevens. Thank you very much to Andy Hart and Chris Scheim for piloting the ship out of port and into open water. And now for the next 2.5 hours, we, just like the New England Patriots, can slowly take on water and sink to the bottom of the ocean, because that sounds about as much fun to me as watching another one of these Patriots games, boys. This is a difficult watch, to say the least, on a regular basis now. There's really nothing fun about it. And yes, there was the almost touchdown towards the very end of the game there that gave a little bit of life, a little bit of juice, and a little bit of jolt to the audience at home and to the 50-something thousand people that were at the stadium today. But If that's what you have to live for, just one hair's breadth, one little thread, one moment like that, like, oh, we have to make that one toe tap. Oh, it's actually supposed to be a toe tap and a heel play work. That's just not good enough. That is just not good enough. This team is absolutely not good enough. And I don't exactly have the time of possession between the two teams here in front of me. I'm sure Miami had the ball a whole lot more than the Patriots did in today's game. This defense deserves better. These fans deserve better. We all, en masse and at large, deserve better than what we're dealing with right now on this particular iteration of the Patriots. It is a drag.
Well, I'm not sure the defense deserves better, because I think this is the second straight loss at home where they let the other team just drive it down their throats to win the football game, and they're supposed to be the better unit. Now, I don't know how long we say that for without Jabril Peppers, without Kyle Duggar. At what point do you just say they're as bereft, I believe that's the word, of talent as the offense with all these injuries and captains going down and that whole thing?
But Andy, if you had both, if both were operating, and I know they aren't, yeah, and if my aunt had a blank, she'd be my uncle. But
true.
If they were both at max capacity, like if they were both as healthy as they should be, the defense would probably outshine or be the far better unit between offense and defense.
Well, it's supposed to be, we haven't seen a lot of that this year with the plays they need to make, with the game on the line. And, you know, they allowed Miami to churn out, I don't know what it was, 150, 180 yards rushing or whatever the hell it was on the day. So that's not something where I'd say, ah, oh, great job. 193 yards rushing. So almost 200 yards rushing on the ground, 4.7 a carry. So
that time of possession, by the way, 34 minutes for Miami, 25 for New England.
Yeah. No, Miami, It was a brutal football game, which is where I'll start. Mm-hmm. Everybody sucked but me, to quote the great Tom Brady. That's where I would leave everything there. And the fact that it is all being put based on my social media on the shoulders of Gerard Mayo calling for firings, and you have these Belichick rump swabs that are taking these victories. Oh, you guys all said Mayo would be better. Nobody said that. Literally no one said Mayo would be better. They said it was time.
Yep.
They said the era had ended.
Massive
and I also
difference.
I just tweeted this out. We're not playing the romantic
you got
game
it.
Of Bill Belichick. The last 4 years sucked. Last year was as dysfunctional as this year. He didn't talk to his coaches. He didn't talk to his quarterback. It was dysfunction junction in Foxborough. You took the MBTA to get there. So let's not pretend there was no dysfunction last year. Is there dysfunction now? I don't know. I don't know if there's dysfunction or if there is just pure ineptitude. And you have a lack of talent and you have a new coaching staff, which they're going to start to come under fire. I don't know who is going to bear the brunt of it once you get past
Alex
May. Alex Van Pelt's in trouble. And part of the problem there is there's an option in my mind. And whenever there's an option or an alternative, that creates angst. And Ben McAdoo is hovering. He's like behind me, like my dog usually does for the podcasts here in my room. And Ben McAdoo is a play caller. Ben McAdoo is a former head coach. Ben McAdoo has run successful offenses. And I just wonder at some point, do you need to give the HC of the offense more help or take away some of his control? Because since summer, Alex Van Pelt has been in charge of this offense. It's all we've heard. And this offense is not very good.
Before you take over, I just want to ask one question in general to the two of you. Would Ben McAdoo make that much of a difference calling plays from this offense that seems pedestrian and predictable AF?
Who knows?
I don't know.
And maybe it'll
worse.
Be more creative. Maybe he'll use motion a little bit more. Maybe he'll, I don't know. Like, it's just, maybe he'll inject something different, because what they're running right now is as basic as it gets. Mm-hmm. Like, there is no creativity. There's no bells and whistles, especially watching, like, Mike McDaniel, who's not even, like, he's not playing with his first, second quarterback at this point. Maybe even his third quarterback. And they still run motion on every play. Go ahead, Andy.
This is fourth quarterback. Sorry, I didn't mean to distract you. I didn't know you were a visual distractor. But I want to give you a little tidbit in that area, Shine, that I think you can bring to your morning show, the Greg Hill Show, tomorrow morning. I don't think this got enough attention. Go back and listen to Gerard Mayo on Friday, his press conference. He was asked about motioning and what is, you know, the reason for motioning and how he views it as a defensive coach. And he said something to the effect of, you motion when you're not that good. He said you don't motion when you have matchups that are fine. He said, when I'm on defense, if you don't motion, I take that to mean you think your guy can beat my guy and you're happy. Because if you're not, you motion, you try to create mismatches, you try to create communication breakdowns.
And that's where we're finding a disconnect, right? Because that's not what motion is at all. Motion is to gain advantages. I mean, look at Tyreek Hill. Like, Tyreek Hill is better than 99% of the corners he's faced.
Right.
But every time you put him in motion, it's giving him an advantage because you can't jam him at the line of scrimmage. He's already moving. He's already going full speed by the time he's 2 yards off the line of scrimmage. There's no buildup.
So either way, the argument is there to motion. Because I would argue, you're not good enough to just line up and beat the people across from you. You don't have a single player on offense who I say every week is going to win his matchup or every snap.
And there's so many different ways to use it too, right? Like,
absolutely.
You can use the Tyreek Hill one. You can use the running back half motion that has become popular over the last couple of years. You can use it before the snap is even imminent just to determine if you're facing zone or man defense.
Correct. The old Tom Brady.
Safety
Tom Brady
and formation
motion.
Identification is not being done as well. In addition to, we think our guys can beat your guys.
Your guys just aren't that talented. Like, you don't have a stud. Like, you should be using every trick in the bag. And I think that's where, and as much as I've railed against him in the past, like, that's where a guy like Josh McDaniels deserves a lot of credit. Because with an offense like this, he would be busting out every trick he can conjure up in order to gain yards and to find some semblance of an offense.
It's a great point. Josh McDaniels used a variety of things over the years, whether it was motion, whether it was tempo. Every once in a while, they'd be struggling. And I know, talent was different. I'm not saying it's the be-all, end-all.
Yeah.
But I'm just saying this offense right now has reached the throw bleep against the wall and see if it sticks portion of the schedule. Because what you're doing isn't working. What you're doing, you ran the ball well enough today, but you don't have a second pitch. You're like Ramondre Stevenson for six.
we'll see if we can get Stevenson six more. And you line up and you're like, I keep waiting for these formations where it's like, oh, they're going to run the ball. And then they run the ball to not run the ball. Like, just once, I'd like to say, this looks like a run and they don't run it. Just be surprised. Just once.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's asking for an awful lot, Andy. I really
is it?
Like, yeah. Yeah.
Is it?
Yeah.
I'm in a mood, Fitzy. Just want to warn you. I'm in a bit of a mood.
Yeah,
even Shime had to talk me down from the ledge of this being the worst football game I've ever seen at any level. I'm including Pop Warner, high school, college, D3.
I saw the tweet. I heard the dialogue.
I've never seen anything like it.
It's bad, but I've seen worse.
No, I've got to say, Shime.
Both teams, all positions?
Yeah, Shime, I legitimately lean closer towards Andy than I do you on this one. There are some silver linings.
Give me three examples.
Small positives to divine and take away.
Three of the Pats games last year's.
Here's one of the best.
The Pats game in Germany was pretty
bad. Andy, here's one of the best things about
today. The Patriots defense was actually good in Germany. There was nothing good about this game, this team, these teams, these coaches, these sidelines,
these
fans.
They're on the field for 4.5 hours in a 3-hour game. Look, the best thing about today's game, Andy, there's only 12 games left.
Well, no, the best thing about it is you lost and you now have the number one overall pick according to Tankathon.
We're number
literally.
One at something. That's great. All right. 617-779-7937 is your number. The lines are predictably just like Route 1 right now, exiting Gillette Stadium. Absolutely jammed. Shime, I want to thank you for helping out while I was late to the Patriots postgame
party
today.
My pleasure, boys.
You are the best.
Bye,
I will hear from you during the week, and I will talk to you when we have our WEI evening program together Thursday from 6 to 7:30. Andy, we got a couple hours. We got a whole lot of angry Pats fans. Let's get to them on the other side. This is the Six Rings postgame show with Fitzy Hart and a cameo from Shime on WEI.